I'm Peter. This is my talk. There's some buzzwords in here, and when I was at the mixer, the speaker's mixer, some people kind of made fun of me. I mean, you could easily call this mapping microservices architecture, and then like kind of just go on and on. The point really is that we're talking about mapping your infrastructure here, right? So this is what I'm interested in. And before I get started, I want to make clear that while I'm up here on stage talking to you all, these are hardly my ideas alone. I've worked with two other smart people, Harman Buss, who's here somewhere, and David Kaltschmidt, who focused on the user experience of what I'm going to be talking about. So just one in a party of many. OK, so here's our table of contents. Motivation. The sort of context of what I'm talking about, what we want in that context, and then the meat of it is really how to build it. So motivation. This is the world we live in, right, a DevOps world. There's a talk by Adrian Cockcroft, several, where he sort of describes what I understand as DevOps. So it used to be that this is how your organization was structured, kind of. You would have all these teams going down from like a very low-level SAN network system administrator, and then you would build kind of abstractions, database administrators, QA, dev, UX design, product ownership at the top. And each of these would be kind of silos, right? There would be areas of responsibility and specialization. But now we kind of don't do that anymore, at least I hope generally we don't do that anymore. We have these sort of DevOps-style teams which cut across these silos, right? So DevOps isn't a role that you hire for. It's a philosophy that your organization sort of embodies. And so this is great, right? We gain a lot of benefits. And chief among them is speed, right? So speed in pushing things out, products out, new features out, this sort of thing. And speed is unequivocally good, right? And as Adrian Cockcroft says, what he learned from his time at Netflix was that speed wins in the marketplace. So this is where we're going, right? Every organization is going to be moving to, if not this model, a model very much like it. There's no turning back the clock on this. But of course, with everything, there's a flip side. Speed is also dangerous. Fully autonomous teams like this, they solve a lot of organizational problems, so they're here to stay. But they tend to generate perhaps a lot of noise. And with noise comes sort of complexity. A couple talks ago, I think it was yesterday, somebody talked about the Oracle architecture. I think it was, yeah, Theo, right? And so I found this slightly out of date diagram of the Oracle database system. And like, okay, we can make fun of this, right? And we probably should. But look at what we're building ourselves, right? Like, here are some architecture diagrams of Netflix and Gilt Group and Twitter. Like, can we really say this is better? Do we have room to talk? Like, I don't know. So what's the lesson that we take from this? That everybody is like doing software wrong? I mean, yeah, probably, sure. But I think this brings us to kind of the first of a series of invariants that I want to talk about in the context of all of this, and that is that complexity is unavoidable, right? When we build these big systems, websites, whatever, we can't help but have complexity. So what do? We gotta, we gotta deal with it. Okay, so mapping microservices. We've built these big systems, all these components, and because we have these Death Star diagrams, maybe we don't really understand in the large what we've done. So what do we want? We want to be able to make complexity understandable. Humans are intelligent and like adaptive creatures. We can understand very complex things if we're given a path to that understanding. So here I would argue we need to take some help from so-called user experience experts. And the guy that pops into my mind when I think of that title is this fellow. Does anybody know who this is? Hands raised, maybe? Yeah. So this is a guy with a website called Worry Dream, and his name is Brett Victor. And he has done a lot of work in the field of user experience, understandability. And I'd like to kind of boil his lessons down to three key points. And that is that user experiences should be visual, dynamic, and humane in order to allow for understanding. He means these words in very specific ways. I'll twist them a little bit. So let's go through them. By visual, I mean kind of literally that things should be visually presented because that is a way that humans are very capable of understanding things. So he did one talk where he describes a pathfinding algorithm, basically, and he shows it in code first, and it's like, okay, I can kind of map those symbols to understanding. But then he shows it kind of applied to this road, and you have this little car, and according to the algorithm, it'll make turns in different ways. And then, so what he does is he maps out the way the algorithm's gonna work over time, and you get these nice little, like, red lines, and then you can actually take this next derivative of that, and you get a bunch of these blue lines here. And by that, you can sort of gain a much more thorough and like, easier to understand understanding of the algorithms. So what we want, probably, is a visual way to understand these architectures, these infrastructures that we've built. The second component is dynamic. And here he has another example of in another talk, he describes a electric circuit. And you can look at it, and you can look at these symbols. And again, like by mapping symbology to meaning, you can kind of understand, if you have the training, what this circuit does. But then he presents an alternative mode where each symbol is kind of exploded along the time dimension. And you can kind of see what the circuit does at each point. And through that like visualization of the time dimension, you can understand what the whole thing does. So by dynamic, I mean that we should recognize that we exist in a sort of four-dimensional universe and that things aren't static. So that our system for understanding microservices should probably also be cognizant of that and reflect this time dimension as well. Lastly is the subject of humanity, or to be humane. And he means this in a very specific way. He has a very funny example of putting a dog in a cage and how, since dogs need to run around, that's inhumane. You need to allow creatures or humans to be able to express things in their like full capacity of their ability. I'm going to twist this a little bit, make it a little bit simpler. The keynote, the very first talk here yesterday, Todd Underwood, he said, let's stop feeding the machines with human blood. And that's kind of what I mean by humane. Humans are good at some things, computers are good at other things. Let's let the computers do the computer things, let's let the humans focus on the human things. Okay, so with those three points in mind, the thing we want, the way we want to map our complex infrastructure is visually, and by that it probably means a graphical way. Dynamically, and by that it probably means responsive. When you deploy a new thing, it should be immediately apparent. When you destroy something, it should be immediately apparent. And by humane, I mean specifically that we don't want to have to config anything. We don't want to have to declare the world. We want to observe the world. We want to leave the process of figuring out what the world is to the computer, because it's very methodical, it's very analytical, it's good at that. Okay, so let's take these principles and let's convert them to invariants. Just kind of making this up as I go along, but it feels right. One invariant might be that we want to model our infrastructure as a directed graph. And this makes sense, right? You see a lot of older sort of network diagrams modeled indeed as graphs of nodes and edges. Okay. Another invariant might be that we want a instantaneous and constantly updating view, thereby reflecting the state of the world, right? Another invariant, the humane invariant, is that we don't want to have to provide configuration or declare indeed anything about our infrastructure. We want to discover it. Okay, so with these invariants, we can kind of envision what such a mapping might look like. We would have nodes, right? And it would be great in our world if these nodes were actors. And by actors, if you think back a few talks ago or maybe yesterday, the thing that maybe we can settle on is that an actor is a process, right? We believe in the process model. So each process, each node in this thing can have metadata, like Kubernetes labels or something like that. So we might attach an ID, process ID. We'd have to make this like globally unique by sticking a machine name on it or something like that. Then we can attach other kind of label pairs to it. We might say that this process happens to be a Java process. It happens to be bound to this network interface on this port. Through introspection, maybe we can do fun things like detect that it has 95 active TCP connections. Through analysis on those TCP connections, maybe we can determine that there's a total of 56 kilobytes per second of ingress, and maybe nearly a meg of egress or something like this, and so on. And then maybe we can introspect even further and say that this process is owned by or run by a user Paul. It's actually Neo4j, and you know it has these flags. We can do other things, add other pieces of metadata to each of these things. And then here's one node. So maybe what we're now interested in is the other nodes in our infrastructure. So we might have other nodes. And by analyzing the connections between them, we can draw these edges. But edges themselves are also sort of things that we can hang metadata on. So we can do the same sort of thing here. We can say this edge can be identified by these TCP tuples. It can have properties like the sorts of information that's flowing over it, the things that it encapsulates, all the way up the OSI layer stack, and so on. So it seems like this is potentially a workable model. And if we have this, then we can build maybe something like this. We can get a nice visualization of our system. These things at the top might be your load balancers. These things in the middle might be your application servers and then data servers or something like that. This makes it easy to spot things like misconfiguration. For example, if this first yellow orange application server happens to be misconfigured, then we can see that pretty clearly, right? Similarly, if some of the application servers are not responding to health checks, they might fall out of the load balancer pool. If we're able to enhance this diagram even slightly and like layer on additional types of information visually, for example, if we can take the overall bandwidth on an edge and sort of use that to make the edges thicker or thinner, then it's very easy to detect otherwise subtle things like perhaps shard imbalance or something like this. So that's pretty neat. Another thing we can do, if we're careful when we design our data model, we can use CRDT-like merge semantics. And we can say, let's take all these application servers and let's sort of merge them into one, right? And so if we are careful, we can have the merged node take the aggregate of all the statistics of all the individual nodes. And in so doing, merging similar entities, we can simplify our diagram, perhaps dynamically. And that gives us what, like ease of exploration, much easier to understand for new employees or something like this. OK, so maybe this is something we can do. Maybe this is something we want. Sounds good to me. How do we build it, right? So that's the hard part. And here I'd like to start from the bottom up, maybe. Let's talk about information sources. So we've already sort of put a flag in the sand, and we said an invariant is that the atom of our data model is the process, or the PID. We could go maybe a little bit lower, but I think this is a good starting point. Everything we care about is probably going to be a process on a machine somewhere. OK, how do we get processes, right? So we can run PS programmatically. We can walk the proc file system. So specifically, we can look at proc PID. Some pros and cons about this data source. Proc PID is, as far as I'm aware, complete. A view of the processes on your file system. When you get into the container world, maybe this isn't quite so true. It's pretty reliable. I'm not aware of anything that can slip through this unless you have some pretty gnarly bugs. The negative, the con, is that it's kind of slow to walk, especially if you want to do it frequently. And as far as I know, this is the only way to get this stuff programmatically without like non-standard stuff. So if there are other like methods, come ask a question, tell me, see me afterwards. I'm actually really curious to know. OK, so if that's our information source, and we can build a data model that maybe looks like this, you take a PID. This is maybe a simplified view, because the PID would probably not be the unique identifier. As I said before, you'd need to combine it with some host information. But then you can hang label pairs attributes on it, right? Process name, user, max CPU, all this stuff that you can introspect on your system, you can hang onto this atom. OK, so that's good. Those are our nodes. Let's take a look at the edges. The edges represent communication. So what are some ways that communication works? You can do named pipes between processes. You can communicate via files on disk. That's a little tricky. You can communicate over the network. So fundamentally, I think the abstraction is that communication occurs over sockets. And I think that's still basically true. So let's hook that in as an invariant, flag in the sands. Communication occurs via sockets. And the question becomes, how do we get information about sockets? So there are ways like this, netstat, LSOF. You can see what sockets are currently being active, being used. Programmatically, it's a bit of a different story. Let's take kind of a half step back and say, what are we actually trying to do here? Let's get data associated with some kind of network ID or socket ID. And then later, sometime later, let's link those network IDs to potentially process IDs. So step one, get data associated to some sort of network identifier. So similarly to procPID, there exists procNet. And here we can do some interesting things. ProcNet is a so-called connection-based source of information. It's somewhat fast. I mean, it's as slow as walking procPID, but compared to other things, you'll see it's relatively fast. It's reasonably reliable, given the constraint that it only shows you TCP connections. But that's the constraint, right? It's just showing you TCP connections, and there's not a lot of metadata associated there that you can extract. Okay. There's this thing called TCP Diag, also connection-based. It's sort of like walking the procnet TCP, but a bit faster. It is a kernel module, and it might be ancient and not actually used. Actually, does anybody know, like, is this still an active thing that people do? I just kind of found it in research. No? Okay, well. Okay, so these are, like, connection-oriented information sources. We won't get useful information that comes out of packets, like byte counts or deep semantic inspection or things like that. So for that, we need to look at sort of packet-based stuff. And libpcap is probably the most obvious one. It allows you to do network sniffing. And it is complete in the sense that you get all the traffic potentially on a given interface or interfaces. Another sort of pro is that it doesn't have any requirements on the host machine. In other words, you can bundle it in some sort of probe daemon, and as long as you have super user privileges, you can get a lot of information out of it. So that's cool, but it's slow, right? And by slow, I mean if you have a Redis server churning 100% CPU on a host somewhere, to sniff all of that traffic might take 2 or 300% CPU or something like this. Not great. So you want to sample, right? And PCAP supports this, but if you start sampling, then you start maybe missing things that are important, so you get inconsistency. And what I want to emphasize here is that this is actually not just a difference in degree. Packet-based stuff isn't just a difference in degree from connection-based information sources. It's fundamentally a different view of the network and of your communication links. So just something to bear in mind. There's another kernel module called ipcontract, which sort of sets up a publish-subscribe communication channel with a kernel. It is connection-based, but it's very quick. You don't have to like pull. You don't have to scan. I think, much more modern than TCP Diag. Another information source to consider. Similarly, there's something called Netlink. And in a sort of a suite of associated tools, NFLog, Netfilter. These are packet-based. It's another sort of like subscription-based model. It's very fast. You get a lot of information. It's complete. But it's relatively new, and the data model is somewhat complex. I would be remiss if I didn't mention the last possible thing, which is if you have access to like hardware, you can set up a span port or do so-called port mirroring, where all the communication that goes to one port, you can have it copied to another port, and then set up like a piece of real physical hardware there to ingest everything and do your computation. So this is definitely complete. You have unlimited resources, effectively, to do all the work you want to do. But it's separate hardware. And it fundamentally breaks our data model, right? Because we're copying information rather than observing information. So okay, just put it there for completeness sake. Are there other sources of information? Again, like I put it to you, this is all I was able to come up with. Maybe there are more. So in general, everything we just discussed is available on Linux. That's a con, but the pro is that other implementations are possible because the model we've set up, this like attribute and label pair, is composable. and the information can compose together. So you can do some of these things, all of these things, other things as well. It all kind of works. Okay, so let's look at what we've built. We have this kind of like edge element. Here it can be represented by a TCP4 tuple. And you can, if you have the right information, you can hang these attributes onto it. Total number of bytes sent, bytes received. If you can do deep packet inspection, then maybe you can even get like application layer stuff. And I guess I should mention that this is sort of an instantaneous view, right? As you're building these objects, these reports, you're collecting information sort of instantaneously, and you're adding. And then at some point, you're going to be done. Okay, so now we have sort of nodes, we have edges, and what we need to do is like link them together. We need to create a process ID to a so-called network ID mapping. And once you bridge these two domains, then you can build this nice directed graph. So let's walk forward. Here, let's say we have a node with this PID, and we have an edge with this thing. And what we want to do is say, can we link these together? And here we need to do a bit of semantic analysis, and we say, we see that this guy is listening on this host and port, and then we see that the source address here is that, and we know due to rules and outside knowledge that these can be considered the same if they're on the same host. And so what we can do is sort of merge them or connect them, and we bridge the domains, right? And in so doing, we attach this metadata to this node, specifically on the egress side of this node rather than ingress, because that's the way the TCP flow is going. But there, that's great. Like we've now, like, this is sufficient to build a directed graph, right? And here we now need to be careful about our merge strategy. Remember, we have all these like individual things, and in order to do these fun semantic merges, we need to make sure our data can compose correctly. So we need to be careful that everything, all these data points, can merge in a way that's logical. So for things like this, for things on edges, bytes sent, bytes received, gets, I've defined them very carefully so that when you compose them together, they're simply adds, right? So note that it's not a rate, for example. It's purely the number of bytes that have been seen on that edge in this window of time, which is implicit. And that's important, because if you want to push many things together, you need to be able to add them together. Similarly, for example, the max CPU scaler up there, the merge strategy is max, right? It's not the current CPU. It's the maximum CPU we've seen over the implicit window. Okay. If you're familiar at all with like distributed data theory, this is basically very similar to a CRDT, the things you need to have a CRDT. Okay, so that brings us to another invariant that I'd like to state semi-formally. That is that observed data must merge without losing information, or must merge coherently, right? And then one other sort of side point, we have these different information sources, and they represent kind of different layers of the OSI stack. Oftentimes, you observe information at a low level that you can't map directly to something at a high level. So you might observe IP information that can't be mapped to a TCP stream. And through trial and error, I will say that data that can't be mapped up this ladder of abstraction should stay in its original domain. So what that implies is that, therefore, we're going to have multiple topologies. We're going to have one topology for each layer of the OSI stack that we really care to see. So here are some topologies. At the highest level, we have like PID to PID. That's like application level. Then you can kind of go down the stack, host to host, IP to IP, MAC address to MAC address, potentially, if you're getting information at that level. These are the atoms of these physical topologies, the actual real data, and they're a function of our information source. So once you have this, then you can sort of do fun stuff, right? You have these nodes with these labels, these edges with these other attributes. And you can do things like construct logical topologies kind of on the fly. So consider a selector language like this. I want to see all the nodes that are in the so-and-so topology with traffic that matches these descriptors that is going from this port. You can do that, right? You can select the things that match that description, see only them, merge them together. So for example, you can take this. You can describe a selector that selects those nodes based on the same sort of key value pairing that we saw in the Kubernetes like language grammar. And then you can say, let's merge them, right? Or you could select sort of a interesting subgraph of your overall graph, and you say, just show me that bit. And the idea here is to build understanding, right? We have this incredibly complex like Oracle 10G style like network of microservices. And no single person can possibly get their head around it unless they're free to explore what we've built in this way, dynamically, visually, and with sort of humanity. So that's what I think is important. If we have this, what else can we do? So here's our little graph. Remember that this is sort of a snapshot, right? It's a snapshot in time. And let's say it's over a window of 10 or 15 seconds, right? We could extend that window, right? We could merge everything together for a day. And then we could say, like, this is what our infrastructure looked like on Monday in the maximum sense. And then let's say this is what it looked like on Tuesday. And so on, and so on. And so we can take these snapshots, assuming we store them somewhere, and then we can, like, compute a delta, right, a diff. That's cool. We can see what's our network has, or what our infrastructure has done in the last week. And remember that every like data point in this graph is actually a time series, right? So we can do stuff like alerting or anomaly detection, as we heard a couple of times ago. It's at least theoretically possible. Okay, so to bring it all kind of back together, the invariance, complexity is unavoidable. We want to model our microservices as a directed graph. We want to have a single sort of dynamic updating view with no configuration or declaration. Should be process-oriented, maybe. We declare that communication occurs over sockets, and we enforce the data has a merge strategy. And again, these are just lines, points in the sand that I put flags. They're not like requirements, but they allow us to build this interesting model. And the model yields this humane tool. What we want is a tool that focuses on the facts and that helps us understand what we've built. John Allspaugh, who was running a workshop earlier today, he had a blog post not too long ago, and he was describing an ideal piece of software to SREs or to software teams. And he said that software that instead of telling me how your software will solve problems, rather, show me a product that is going to join my team as an awesome team member. And I think this is what we want tools like this to do, right? Not make huge, grandiose claims about things that can solve for you, but rather be a tool that sort of enhances my intelligence and my ability to understand the thing that I'm responsible for. Okay, so I'm almost out of time. What I want to say is that this thing kind of exists. Myself and the two others who I mentioned at the beginning of the talk have spent a long time kind of iterating, and it's here. It's recently been open sourced. Weaveworks is the company that I now work for. It's still very early stage. It doesn't do all the things I said that I wanted it to do, but the data model's there, and I'm going to be working to make it as cool as I said it could be. So if this is at all interesting to you, please take a look, open source, all that good stuff. And I have exactly 1 minute for questions, thoughts, anything else. Thanks very much.